Tensions are high between India and Pakistan again after India shot down a Pakistani reconnaissance plane. Indian officials said that the plane was well inside Indian airspace. On the other hand, Pakistani officials said the plane was attacked while on a routine training flight. As one might expect, in Washington, the Clinton administration is urging India and Pakistan to exercise restraint. We're going to talk about it a bit. We're joined now by Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of the Internet email in Pakistan, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia. Hi, Imran.
Hello, George.
What's the situation here as you understand it?
Basically, George, it is more of the same as you and I have discussed in the past. Things seem to cool down, but even when this de-escalation had taken place several weeks ago, I had told you that we could expect flare-ups at very short notice, and that is indeed what seems to be happening.
Now, theoretically at least, the plane may have strayed into Indian airspace. By the time it went down, though, it was back in Pakistani territory, so that's what's confusing the issue either way. I mean, that's what makes one says one thing, one says the other, but that's the nature of both sides of the story, right?
Absolutely, George. As a matter of fact, the very fact that the plane was a reconnaissance plane on a patrolling mission, including training as part of the exercise, suggests that when you are flying close to and not clearly marked border in marshy or sandy areas, yes, you can always stray this way or that way. But at the same time, what the Pakistani's perspective is, this was not a supersonic jet that, you know, you shoot it down and since it's traveling at 2,000 miles an hour, it flies back into the border. These are slow, pokey planes, basically, and it did indeed land in what is Pakistani territory. And that is why the Pakistanis were able to recover and show all the photographs, etc., off the plane. But again,
And this is, we should make it clear, this is nowhere, I mean, well, it's along the border with India and Pakistan, but it's well, what, southwest of Kashmir, right? To the other end of Pakistan.
Almost exactly, almost, I would say, almost, not 1,000 miles, but let's say 800 miles away, possibly.
And so this is irrelevant to that situation, other than the tensions that are ongoing. But the similarity is, and we should underscore, if I'm not mistaken, one of the things that sparked the last turmoil along the Kashmiri border was the Pakistani shot down a couple of Indian jets.
Correct, and those were basically more of the aggressive Air Force planes, which were actually shot down in Pakistani territory. And they also crashed in Pakistani territory, including the recovery of a dead body of one of the Indian pilots and the taking prisoner of a second one, which was considered a more aggressive action by the Pakistanis and was more of a media and public relations win for them. And this one may also be giving them that opportunity.
Of course, the Indians said that they were not in Pakistani airspace when they were shot down, but I mean, that's what you get from both sides.
Correct, but at the same time, that's why Pakistan did a good job at that time. Pakistan actually arranged for the media to visit the site of the crash, and actually, if you will remember, they were able to hand back the body of the Indian pilot as well as the Indian prisoner of war who then went back to India. And the first statement he made upon his welcome after the welcome ceremony was that he was ready to go back into action against Pakistan. So that sort of belied the true events there.
Now, just to make things more confusing, if I understand this correctly, this incident took place in an area where there is some kind of a, it's like a, I guess it's like a river that runs into the Arabian Sea, and this, you know, mud and one thing and another moves this border around. First of all, it's disputed exactly where the border is, and it keeps moving anyway, and so all, and that's how touchy this is. A few hundred yards one way or another gets everybody in an uproar.
Absolutely, and George, even if the plane had been shot down in Indian territory, the fact that patrolling is routine, especially because this, I believe, was a plane more given to patrolling on the ocean, for example, on the sea, as well as land, of course. The idea is that you will always be somewhat encroaching upon the other country's region, when you're on any kind of reconnaissance flight. In fact, the word reconnaissance doesn't really apply when you're flying in your own territory all the time. And you try to fly as close to a moving border or an unmarked or very poorly marked and mobile border at the same time. So the whole issue was the fact that it was not a fighter bomber or something like that that was shot down. That is giving the Pakistanis the opportunity to call the Indian acts barbaric, etc.
Yeah, so, but the point is that both sides are a bit itchy on the trigger, and the tensions are very high. Where are we now in trying to bring down the level of tensions to kind of settle this down? Where are we in that stage?
I think obviously both countries realize that things like this can easily flare into full-fledged war, and the fact that both countries have nuclear capability and enough hate for each other means things can get out of hand very fast. I think there will also be a little bit of showmanship involved, but right now the Pakistanis are probably going to find this an opportunity to not as much a face-saving measure as of showing that if they lost any goodwill in the apparent backing down of the guerrillas in Kashmir, that if there was any perception in the world that they were Pakistani insurgents, this will show them that, well, we're not really the aggressors, because in this case it's something happening 800 miles away and unrelated to Kashmir, and Pakistan has put its air force on very high alert, and the F-16s have been flying pretty aggressively in patrolling the skies of Pakistan. Now, what that means, of course, is that the idea has been that, yes, you will always have these symbolic / defensive maneuvers taking place, but it's always possible for two air force sorties from the two air forces to be in the vicinity of each other, and suddenly you have a dogfight that can erupt.
Mm-hmm.
And so things can actually get out of hand pretty fast. What the Pakistanis probably are hoping for, and which the Indians are going to try to prevent from happening, the Pakistanis are hoping that this will sort of buy them some sympathy in the West that they may have lost in the past with the Kashmiri insurgency. President Clinton has expressed some interest in going back to India and Pakistan on the tour that he had originally planned and then rescheduled, if not cancelled. So Pakistan is going to try to leverage that in some sort of support, moral if not otherwise, from President Clinton, who had said that he would take a very active personal interest in solving the Kashmir problem. So the Indians are trying to defuse the situation, because they realize that if the situation is not defused, then the United States as well as other foreign governments will have more of a say in what gets done about the Kashmir issue. So the Indians are trying to make the right gestures by releasing any Pakistanis that they might be holding, or also in terms of talking about bilateral discussions, etc.
Now, let me back you up half a second, just find out where we're at, because the last time we were talking about India and Pakistan, we were talking about the fighting, fairly heavy fighting between the two sides. They were the Indian Army and rebels, I guess, that were supposedly non-aligned with the Pakistani government, but let's face it, they were unofficially supported by Pakistan.
Absolutely.
And that was in the Himalayan regions of Kashmir, and they fought for about 3 months. I think several hundreds of people were killed in that. And where did that wind up? What exactly? How did that get resolved finally? Where are you there?
It really did not get resolved in the sense, George, that the real resolution is going to lie in the solution to the Kashmir problem.
But the Indians, am I correct? The Indians drove the rebels out and regained the territory, but they didn't do what Pakistan feared they might, which was come around from the Pakistani side and attack from the back. Instead, they fought their way up that very tough mountainside and stayed on their own side of that line that has been drawn down Kashmir's middle.
Right. Actually, that had been fear was that if the militants did not back off, as the Pakistani government also requested them to, and there was some resistance to that proposal, the fear was that if the militants did not back out or back down, then the Indians might have to take more aggressive measures. Now, any fact or any perceived support that Pakistan gives to the militants would still be indirect and harder to prove than an overt Indian aggressive action, which would have taken them into the Pakistani side, because that would really be ground for or close to declaring actual war as opposed to fighting a proxy war. So things
but here's where it's coming from. As I'm standing on the sidelines and I'm saying I'm an observer, I could make this case. I'm not saying it's correct. That was aggressive, an aggressive move that was at least unofficially backed by Pakistan. The Indian government says that Pakistani reconnaissance planes have on numerous occasions over the last several months been seen in Indian airspace, violating Indian airspace. And it looks as though Pakistan is trying to needle India into reacting, and then deal with world reaction as India the aggressor.
It could be perceived by that way by a person in a third location looking at things.
Mm-hmm.
But then the Pakistani counterpoint has been that if we are the ones who are needling them, then how come our reconnaissance plane was shot down in our own territory,
mm-hmm.
whereas the Indian fighter planes were actually found crashing into Pakistani territory. And so, regardless of who needles whom, the fact is that the aggressive fighter planes get shot down within Pakistani territory, and a reconnaissance plane is shot down by India and falls in Pakistani territory. So, empirical evidence as well as circumstantial evidence would suggest that India is the aggressor. Now, obviously, it would be in Pakistan's interest to create events that lead to such results, because Pakistan has been claiming for a long time that it is not the aggressor in this case, and that, yes, it does provide aid to the Kashmiris, but it is not really sending its own military and all in, which is what the Indians have been claiming.
Now, who's going to resolve this? Because the Pakistanis took no reporters, no photographers. I think they had one state-run TV photographer that went into the site to look at the smoldering wreckage and so on.
Right.
But they do have film of it. And who's going to look at it? Is the United Nations going to look at this and try to make some assessment? Or who's going to mediate this dispute?
George, I think it's meaningless to mediate this dispute, because who cares if the United Nations watches a video of a smoldering plane?
Yes.
The issue is the United Nations has been sitting on its seat, basically, for 50 years now, and has not resolved the case on which it had passed resolutions 50 years ago.
Yeah, the United Nations actions are kind of like polls. If they go in your favor, then it's okay, but if not, you ignore them.
Yes, that's true.
That seems to be the world case. Anyway.
That absolutely, that applies to almost anything. It's
yeah.
almost like religion. Also, I may be a Muslim, but I may choose to make sure if I don't drink, I tell everybody I don't drink. But I might be doing other things because they don't suit me.
Yeah.
So in that same way, the fact is that you asked me the question on what is the resolution to this current crisis. The resolution to the current crisis is also a meaningless issue. You and I could make phone calls to the respective ambassadors of the
mm-hmm.
two countries, and this resolution, and this would result in a de-escalation this week. But does that solve the root cause of the problem? It does not. And that root cause is that the Kashmiri people, 95-97% of them Muslim, are still living as prisoners in their own homeland without the rights to self-determination that the United Nations gave them 50 years ago, and that the United Nations and the West, including the United States, have done nothing to bring to the forefront of either the public or the United Nations table or in discussions. And that is what the Pakistanis are hoping for.
Are the Pakistanis pounding the table in the United Nations for the United Nations to, if in fact what you're telling us is the bottom line, they're pounding the table for the United Nations to live up to those resolutions?
George, they've done that for 50 years. I think the tables have broken already, and they're
looking for the furniture. Usually, the United Nations will side with a separatist movement if there's any legitimacy to it. What is it that makes this one unusual in that regard?
It's out of sight, out of mind. It's been there for 50 years. It's like if you came to my home office, you would see my desk has piles and piles and piles of work, mm-hmm. and my current mission in life is to make sure that pile number 5, which is the latest one, continues to grow by 10% and be reduced by 11%.
In the Cold War, I can understand during the Cold War where the Soviet situation and India's alliance, kind of quasi-alliance with that side, may have, and Pakistan's relationships closer to the West may have tempered emerging or third world countries' concern for that dispute. But now, it seems to me, separatist movements are garnering a great deal of sympathy in the United Nations, and there are several of them going on at this time.
Absolutely, George, but this is not even a separatist movement. It is the right to self-determination of a people that was given that right 50 years ago, and right now what is happening is, unfortunately for the Kashmiri people, there is no big war going on over it in terms of the Cold War. Russia itself is in a weak situation, begging for money from the West, with a very ill and potentially mentally unstable leadership in place. And at the same time, the United States is courting India and finding this as an opportune moment to become friends with India, which is like 1 billion people, both a great market, a great economy in the future, and also a great potential political ally down the road, especially if the Soviet Union becomes even weaker as we go along. So the U.S. is not really that keen on getting justice if in the meantime it can be delayed another 10 years, if in the meantime India can be courted for economic and political purposes.
And obviously, there's no way to speculate on what could happen here. We know they're both nuclear powers, and if this escalates, anything could happen. And the tensions are going to continue. It doesn't appear there's any resolution. What does it mean, though, in the meantime, just to the economic realities of that region of the world? You know, I've talked to folks about India, and India's own internal problems and now this and some other things have made it very difficult for it to realize some of its potential, a lot of its potential, as an economic, an emerging economic force. And I suspect that this has an even greater impact on Pakistan in that regard.
Absolutely, George. And that is the disappointment that at a great time in history when economic development is sort of circling the globe and even previously closed societies are opening their doors, these countries that have a lot more potential than some of the basket cases of yesterday are basically squandering valuable resources and lives, basically, in trying to solve a problem that the leadership of a country like the United States and United Nations resolutions could help solve literally in 1 week, let's say 1 year, if not.
We will talk more about it, I'm sure, unfortunately, Imran. I hope things take a turn for the better when next we speak. Thank you much for joining us today.
Thank you, and I thank the audience for their interest.
Imran Anwar, founder of ImranNet Services in New York, pioneer of Internet email in Pakistan, well-known media expert on India, Pakistan, and Asia.